Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast, all things PR, marketing, and now beer. So we're doing a little change here, and we have a great guest to kick things off. As you can see, we're videotaping this, even though I have a face for radio. And we are going to start showing this and traveling around, talking to our favorite people and our guests and friends. And we thought, what better place to start than with the godfather of Baltimore microbrewing, Hugh Sisson, Heavy Seas owner, founder, guru. Hugh, thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here.
And with me, as always, is our esteemed COO, Jen Renahan. Hello, Jen.
Hello.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to all of you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
And this, this came about because we've been talking a lot about, it's our 17th anniversary, and we've been talking a lot about our agency and kind of what we stand for and what our brand means. And it drills down to the fact that we are an agency that people want to have a beer with, that people like to work with. We work hard, we work smart, and here we are.
I always encourage people to have a beer.
I bet you do. I bet you do. Well, Hugh, that's a good segue, and Jen's right. So this came together. It was one of our kind of our pillars and our revelations out of a great meeting we had with Jerry Sandusky. And, so here we are. So you're going to see us drinking a lot on this podcast moving forward, but what better place? We are at the Heavy Seas Tap Room. It is an off day. Hugh opened his doors for us, and we are grateful to him for that. Hugh, this whole craziness for you started in the early 80s. You running the bar, Sisson's, with your pop and getting laws passed to start the whole microbrewery or micro, and then leapt into you making your own beer and starting to sell. Tell us a little bit about the backstory, because I have a lot of questions about your expectations and how the heck this got to here.
All right, the backstory from the Sisson's days, or the backstories from the Clipper City / Heavy Seas?
Start with the Sisson's days. I think it's interesting.
Well, okay, so so I ended up in the bar business in May of 1980. My father sucked me back into this new bar because I was a theater student, and I'm sure he did not want me being a theater student. So he sucked me into this bar business. We tell the story about how I showed up, and the first 5 minutes I was there, he threw me the keys to the front door, and as I caught them, he said, "Okay, don't screw up," and walked out the damn door. So I'm in the bar business. Now, long story short, I didn't know anything about business, didn't know anything about the bar business. I knew a lot about bars, but only from the bar stool perspective. So anyway, so we were on Cross Street in at the time, South Baltimore, it's now Federal Hill. Yeah. And there were 9 bars on our block, and everybody had exactly the same stuff. And I didn't know anything about business, but I knew we needed to become different. So because I'd had the opportunity to study in London, and when I was a theater student, I had been drinking English beers. So I had been exposed to what was, at the time, better beer. So I decided, okay, well, we're going to turn this into a beer joint. So by 1983 or so, we were probably Baltimore's number one beer destination. And in order to support that, I started doing educational beer tastings. And in order to have a clue what the hell I was actually talking about, I started homebrewing, which I did badly. But long story short, we kind of looked up probably 1984. My dad and I said, geez, what would happen if we could actually make beer here? There was... it was illegal in probably 45 of the 50 states. We didn't know what you could do. I mean, nowadays, there was no template for us to follow. Right. Nowadays, somebody decides they want to open a brewery, the conversation runs something like this. Hello? Yes?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to order a brewery, please. Next week? That would be delightful. Thank you. Click. All right. Well, that didn't exist. No. So we needed to do a lot of research to find out if this was even physically feasible. Had to go to England twice.
Me too.
Bummer, yes. Dude. So we did, and we finally figured out it was possible, and we sort of figured out maybe some sources for equipment. But now we had to deal with the legal issue. In 1987, we put a bill in the Maryland legislature to legalize brew pubs, helped greatly by Senator George Della. I fully expected the bill to fail. It passed. So I had an immediate OF moment. I better get this done before somebody beats me to it.
Right.
And so in August of 1989, the family restaurant became Maryland's first brew pub, and I was the brewer.
Amazing.
Now, I continued as the brewer there until the end of 94 when I left to start this venture, and we just... we're in our 28th year of operations now.
Hugh, it's remarkable. So, I mean, great backstory, but, you know, saying you had no business, but you had business instincts, right? You knew we needed a point of differentiation. We needed to be different. We need to set ourselves apart. You did that through beer. When you went and you started what was originally Clipper City,
right,
before it transitioned to Heavy Seas, did you have full confidence that this was a palpable business model that you can grow, or is this a passion play that you're like, wow, I'd be great if I can make money at doing this?
Well, the experience at Sisson's, because we were the first brew pub, gave me a fair amount of confidence that we could do this.
Sure.
However, if you look at the growth curve of craft beer from the early 80s to about 1995, you know, it's a continuous uptick. Well, in 1996, that line goes flat for about 5 years. So we opened basically in 1996. So it's like, oh, what do I do now? And those first years were brutal. I mean, we started contract brewing just to keep the lights on.
Right.
And our Clipper City brand, which was our original branding concept, we were forced to sort of mainstream it because, all of a sudden we couldn't sell beer much beyond a 100-mile radius of this facility, and that market was still heavily, macro beer market. So the big, adventurous, bold beers that I wanted to brew, I really couldn't do successfully. So in I want to say 2000, maybe 2001, the market finally had sort of come back to people being interested in bigger beers. We'd had a little bit of a Darwinian cleanup in the years 95 to 2000, so some of the riffraff went away.
Right.
So I wanted to go back to doing these bigger beers, but because Clipper City as a brand had been sort of mainstreamed, I didn't think I could do it under that brand name. So we created Heavy Seas as a sort of an interesting segue from the rather staid vision of the Clipper ship to the more adventurous vision of the pirate ship. And so we created Heavy Seas as a new brand, and then we put all of our bigger beers under that umbrella, and that really was what made the difference. And again, it was a point of differentiation.
Yeah. The brand itself, so Heavy Seas over last 20-some-odd years, has become such a well-respected, beloved brand. And brands, we always like to say brands, you can't just say, I'm going to create a brand. You have to do something consistently over time with excellence, passion, all those things. I mean, when did you see you ventured out with Heavy Seas? It was kind of like, hey, we're going to put our bigger beers. Like, what was that tipping point when you said, wow, Heavy Seas is a thing and we're growing exponentially?
It's probably 2010, because 2010 was the year that we basically stopped producing anything under the Clipper City brand, and we had another brand that we had acquired along the way called Oxford, and we stopped producing any of those beers, and we focused everything on the brand Heavy Seas. So I remember having a conversation with an old friend of mine who used to help me do beer presentations at Sisson's and he now works for our local wholesaler. And I ran into him at Max's on Broadway, and I told him, Joe, I've decided that I'm going to just focus everything on Heavy Seas and get rid of the other two brands. And he looked at me and he told me, Hugh, that is the stupidest thing I think I've ever heard you say. And we grew 35% that year.
Wow.
So that was... we were reducing SKUs. We were just coming out of a recession, and son of a gun. I mean, so that was, you look at me and go, okay. Yay! A
And you know, you're creating less confusion in the market, right? You're saying, this is us. This is what we are. We're all in on this.
Right.
There's a good book out called Burning the Boats, and it's about how, you know, warriors back in the day used to go to attack an island. They'd burn the boats because that meant you're going to win and survive or you're going to die. Like, there's no, and it's all about that, like committing to what you believe in and staying the course. And we all don't have that kind of courage. It's pretty bold.
No, it's rather terrifying. I mean, I mean, anybody who thinks that going into small business, especially a consumer product, isn't going to involve a lot of white knuckle moments and a whole lot of bruise and ease is just not realistic.
Yeah. I think you've also been really smart in how you've partnered yourself with other organizations. So, you know, we worked together a long time ago with the 2131 beer.
Right.
And you've been really bold in stepping out and doing, you know, the Ukraine beer and kind of, but smart, like really smart.
Well, we've had a lot of fun with things like that, but you don't want to go to the well too often. So you want to go to the well when it's something that you think makes sense and that you can legitimately align with. There's a few more things that we're probably going to do in the coming days, but I really want things to be stuff that is relevant to who we are, our core values, to the extent that I actually know how to articulate them.
You know, we're right there, fearless,
bold, and independent. Yes. Right. So yeah, and more and more because we've got some interesting things we're probably going to do in 2024. And when I get pushback, I say, "Did you read the packaging? Okay, is this fearless and bold? Okay. Well, in that case, come on, let's get with the program."
Yeah, I love that you stick with that. But speaking of that, and kind of, you alluded to this earlier, kind of evolving with your industry. You know, year plus ago, beer sales generally across the board were going down a little bit.
Yep.
Canned cocktails were the new it thing. And that's a big, big ass transition.
Yes,
and
it
you jumped in. What made you do that besides necessity, right? Like, what was, you get your team around you and you're saying, hey, there's a market here that we need to jump into.
There's a couple of things that come into the consideration there. First, I mean, it's no secret that there has been an explosion of small breweries across the country in the last 10 years. I think there's 8,000 new breweries in the last 10 years. I mean, when I started this company back in 95, 96, I think there were under 400 operating breweries in the country. There's now over 9,000.
Wow.
So first off, you have a market that's getting extremely crowded, partially because of that. So you have to find ways of becoming more and more relevant in your backyard, and you have to understand that you're going to lose momentum in the further away you get geographically, it's going to be harder and harder to do it. I used to sell 20,000 cases of beer a year in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think we did just under 5,000 last year. Well, people say, what happened? Well, there's 500 breweries in North Carolina right now. So if you're dealing in a market which is being sort of more geographically defined, and you already hold a certain amount of share in that market, you really need to find ways of diversifying what you're doing to continue to grow. Because you don't have the ability to, let's go up in six states, which is how so many other breweries did it for years. So, okay, you've got to either create new innovative products, which we have done and will continue to work on, or you've got to find other ways of doing it. So one of the things that we've done is the crafted cocktails. Yeah. After years and years of not doing any contract production, we're now beginning to do some of that. And there are other things that are in the hopper. You know, one of our wholesalers about 2 years ago said, you know, I'm beginning to get to the point where we're not just a beer wholesaler anymore. We're a beverage distributor. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of in the process of transitioning into becoming a beverage company, not just a brewery. Right.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And, yeah, sorry, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, Hugh, like, now you mentioned all these breweries popping up all over the country, but even here in Maryland, I mean, you see that in some ways, you know, well, in a lot of ways, it's competition. But in a lot of ways, I think it's also a bit of a nod to you. I mean, how often do you associate with these new young folks that are opening up their places and trying to make good? And do they pick your brain? Is it more of a collegial sort of world where we all get along, or is it more like, all right, let's go, you're in my territory?
The industry is still pretty collegial, and I hope that continues. You know, there's an expression that the collegiality ends at the cooler door. So it's like, you know, hi, good to see you. Take your hand off my shelf space. But I mean, there's still a lot of collegiality in it. It has changed, though, because the numbers have gotten so much bigger. So there is a Brewers Association of Maryland, which I co-founded 20-some years ago. Mm. And I'm still active, although I'm no longer on the board. I stepped off the board, I guess, about 2.5, 3 years ago, something like
20 years ago, it'd be a lonely meeting, right? There's like two of you guys?
Well, 7 or 8.
Yeah, right.
And now when I walk into the meetings, I mean, if I know 20% of the people in the room, that's probably a good day.
Yeah.
It's basically most of it's basically a good thing. I do think that, unfortunately, the numbers there are too many, and there will be some sort of weeding out. Obviously, I need to make sure we're not one of those, but I don't think that's likely to be the case. But having said that, you can't take anything for granted. But there's still a lot of collegiality in the industry, and I hope that stays.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, you know, how do you approach relationships, you know, when it comes to business, and any advice you might have for, you know, young people getting into the game? And we always talk about the importance of relationships.
Well, relationships are critical. I mean, how many relationships have gotten built over having a beer in a bar?
Yeah.
I mean, I still do a lot of, you know, I set aside time whenever possible, you know, especially when you're trying to make new relationships, to sit down and have a beer with somebody. But I mean, relationships are still a very important part of everything that we do. I mean, you have to have, in our particular niche, you know, you have to have great relationships with your wholesalers. You have to have great relationships with as many key retailers as is practicable. And these are skills that we preach to all of our sales and marketing people. You know, you can never know too many people. You can never have too many friends. And those pay dividends. I mean, you guys know how that works. It's wonderful after all these years having done this for as long as I've done it, that there's still lots of times when we'll run against a problem and I'll go, I know who to call.
Yeah.
And you can make the phone call and all of a sudden, you may not immediately solve the problem, but you're a long way to getting where you need to be. And that's only because of 40 years of networking.
Well, and also, and beyond, like, a lot of people network, right, Hugh? But I mean, I think from my interactions with you and the relationship we've built over time, I mean, you're honorable. You do what you say you're going to do. There's no bullshit in you. And I think all that over time, yes, builds this trusting relationship. And now you have a network of, you know, friends versus just business associates that want to help you and honestly like you and love your brand.
Well, that's very kind of you to say that, and I appreciate that. But I will flatter myself because a lot of that does come down to if you say you're going to do it, you gotta damn do it.
Yep.
And people need to believe you when, you know, okay, this is what we're going to do. And sometimes that's not always, you know, easy to do. I mean, integrity is a core value.
Yeah.
And that's never going to change.
No, it's evident. There's a certain Hall of Fame shortstop that we've had the pleasure of working with for some time. And, you know, his dad always taught him, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right.
Yep.
Right. And doing right means being honest, being honorable, doing what you're going to say, and taking the time to do it right.
Right,
Yeah. Hugh, a couple more and we'll let you go. How do you decide now when to venture out with a new product? Because I would imagine there's a lot You want to, your brewmaster wants to make something cool and new. They believe there's a market for it. How do you make that determination? Because it's such an investment to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the way things work when it's working well, and it doesn't always, is that, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to each other, those of us on the senior team. I remain very interested in any ideas that anybody's got. Because I am not, you know, one of my goals is to make sure that at the end of the day, I'm the dumbest guy in the room. So I want to hear what these folks have to say. Yeah. And you know, every now and then you look up and it's more often than you think, you go, wow, okay, that idea has merit. You know, okay, let's spend some time fleshing that out. And, you know, one of the great frustrations for me is that I happen to believe that small business should be extremely nimble. But when you start talking about logistics and package designs and all, you know, we're not as nimble as I would like for us to be. Now, one of the things that we did do over the last couple of years is we did put in a smaller brewery in addition to the large brewery. So that gives us the ability, if we want to just take a flyer, that we can make
something.
Something on that. We can trial it in the tap room here, and so a lot of the quote unquote new innovations that are going to come out are things that we've actually done some trial and error in this space.
Right.
But by the same token, I mean, you're in a consumer product world.
Yeah,
you have to be constantly reinventing because them folks out there, they get bored.
Yes.
So,
do you feel like so many industries, especially product industries, are cyclical, right? And we saw the drop off a little bit in beer sales and the demand for craft cocktails to rise and that sort of thing. Do you see that kind of just coming full circle? And, you know, craft beers, I know people that like it are never going away, but do you feel like it'll keep coming just like brown liquors picked up in the last few years? And
I do believe that business cycles are reality. And yes, brown spirits, 30 years ago were taking it on the chin, and now brown spirits are driving the spirits industry. Right. Macro beer dominated the world until 30 years ago. Now, I don't think that cycle's going to come back, but I do think that craft beer is in sort of a more challenging, is the word I'll use, cycle right now. But I anticipate that things are going to come back around. I mean, craft beer was in a more challenging cycle back in 1996.
Right.
Yeah. And that took 3 years or so to work through. I think a lot of it is, you know, you have to believe in your vision, and then you have to have the courage to stick to your vision, understanding that visions do change. I mean, you know, the analogy, our nautical theme, both as Clipper City and as Heavy Seas, and if you've ever been a sailor, there's no straight lines in sailing. You know, it's all about tweak. Oh, shit, the wind's coming out over here. Damn, okay.
Yep.
So you have to be willing to do that, but you can still stay true to the ultimate vision. And I just think I think I just wandered why off, went off topic there, but I think that's how you get there.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And last thing, what about for you personally? I mean, before we started filming this, we met your daughter, and she's heavily involved in the business now. I mean, how much longer is Hugh Sisson going to be running this operation day to day? And now it feels like maybe you have, is there a plan in place? It's something you've been thinking about for a long time? And
well, I've been thinking about it for a long time. The COVID was a kick in the ass on so many levels to so many industries, and it certainly was a kick in the ass to us. And look, the bars and the restaurants really, really got clobbered. But, you know, I just to underscore a point, draft beer was 35% of our business. And in January of 2020, I had a little over 2,000 accounts pouring draft beer. Right. And in April of 2020, I sold draft beer to six companies.
Right.
Wow. So So
yeah, that's
crazy. So we're still in the recovery mode, although I think we're in pretty decent shape. But so I'm going to be here doing what I do for a while.
Well, it seems like you're still energized by it too.
No, I mean I still like what I do, and I love working with the people that I work with. But you know, there does come a time, and this is a younger person's thing. So I'm not really sure in a definitive way, but yeah, I'd like to find a way to begin to phase myself out sometime in the next year to year and a half. How that exactly works out, I'm not sure yet. So
we'll
I don't mean to vague you to death, but
no, I didn't expect a full answer on that right. either. It was very
yes,
good.
Yes, I'll be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, wow, breaking news. No, Hugh, honestly, thank you. There was no better way to start this one. Jen came with the idea, like, we start incorporating beer into our podcasting. I think it was a reason for her to start drinking during the day, but it was also a no-brainer to start with you if you're willing. And thank you for being so gracious with your time. Oh. Appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cheers.
And thank you, everybody, for listening and watching for the first time. Spin is a four-letter word, the Maroon PR podcast, all things PR, marketing, et cetera, et cetera. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Spin is a four-letter word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback, too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow at Maroon PR on Twitter and LinkedIn.